seat here. Nobody wants to sit in the front. Very Catholic. Now, you might wonder, since it's a holiday, about the liturgical color. Maybe nobody thinks about liturgical colors, but I'm just going to say it because this is a liturgical community. On feast days, usually white is the liturgical color, or maybe red, and I'm wearing green. So you say, why green? It's Labor Day. Because Labor Day is not a liturgical feast day. It's a secular holiday. But let's start with Labor Day. I've been thinking about it. Labor Day weekend really is what we honor. And I noticed as I was walking around yesterday, the streets were empty. I think people might have gone somewhere for the holiday or for the long weekend. But Labor Day is always on the first Monday of September. I had to look that up because it seems so late. I mean, I think of Labor Day as being at the beginning of September. Here's this September 7th already, but it's still the first Monday. This is as late as it can possibly get. So that's where we are. In my experience, because I lived in the United States half my life, and my experience of Labor Day is all connected with school. We always went back to school on the day after Labor Day. And I think it's still that way in Minnesota, but I don't know. School schedules have gotten so unpredictable. But that's what it was. So Labor Day was the last day of summer vacation. And also the day to think about not going, maybe some excitement, but a lot of dread about going back to school. So that's how it was. I don't remember anything about labor. I don't remember ever seeing or hearing about a parade or speeches or anything to honor laborers. It's not part of my experience. When I got to college, every year, the first day of class was Labor Day. And we would always complain. We're supposed to be a holiday. And they said, no, we start the academic year on Labor Day. I don't know why they did it at that school. But that's how it was. So no holiday during college. Now, in the Philippines, Labor Day is on May 1st. So that's different. And there are parades, or at least there's protests. The leftists always make a big deal out of May 1st, and the communists have their protests. And laborers are exploited, and their rights do have to be defended. So they do suffer unjustly, and it's maybe more obvious in the Philippines. But that is an issue that should concern all of us. You don't have to be a communist or a socialist to stand up for people's rights. Okay, anyway, that's what Labor Day is all about. Here, Labor Day is on the first Monday of September, and again, I looked that up. I said, why is that? And apparently it's roughly halfway between the 4th of July and Thanksgiving. That's the reason I found it. I don't know if that's true, but that's a very American way of thinking. 4th of July and Thanksgiving are big feast days, and we needed another one. So put it in the middle. But also there was awareness of a need for a break for laborers and a day to recognize their plight and to recognize their dignity. So that's how that arose. Now, looking back at this, even way before the rise of Labor Day, which I don't know how old it is, 150 years old or something like that. Work or labor has always been part of human experience from the very beginning. In fact, if you look in the book of Genesis, the assignment of the first man and the first woman was to care for the garden. Before the fall, and so before sin, work was already part of human experience. That's part of human dignity, in fact, to work, take care of the garden, work as a participation with God in his creation, which is all good. Now, with the fall, meaning when sin entered the picture, of course, work also suffered, and work became more difficult. Usually we talk about the curse, the curse of sin, or people think of work as a curse. It's not a curse, but it's under the burden of sin now. And it's more difficult because the ground was cursed, and now it's harder to raise crops. And of course, the effect of sin on childbearing made it difficult, and that's called labor, right? Labor Day. Nobody associates Labor Day with childbearing, but that's also labor. Okay. The effect of sin was to bring the weight the weight of sin on the task which we already had, which was to work. And then for all of history, we worked. I mean, that's part of human life, and it was pretty normal. I mean, people worked in the fields and did fishing and whatever, shepherding, maybe some craftsmanship of carpentry and pottery and whatnot. That's just part of human life. Usually, work was very clearly connected to its fruits, because you worked for yourself, you worked on your own property, or you might have worked for the prince or something, but it was clear that what you were doing bore some fruit. If you're a carpenter, you make something, you have a piece of furniture. The big shift that took place was the Industrial Revolution. Now, I'm just going to gloss over this because it's not really part of pondering the word, but I mean, the Industrial Revolution, with the rise of big factories and, you know, industrialized manufacturing and textile mills and mining and all these things, that changed the experience of work for many, many people. It became work for someone else, work for the company, right? The company. And you might not see any fruit of your own labor except for your pay, if you got paid. And if you got paid just a little bit, well, that's what it seemed like you were worth. And see, what shifted was the dignity of the worker was put down and the value of the output was raised up. So a shift that made it possible to exploit workers in new ways. And so that's why the rise of the workers' unions and the rise of the awareness, even in the church, of social doctrine of the church to recognize what's good and what's bad. I mean, human technology and advancement is not a bad thing, but if it's used against the human person, then it's a problem. And that's where Labor Day came in, I think. Somehow the awareness that you can't just let this go on, you can't just treat people like slaves, they have to be given their dignity, and so, and Labor Day. Now, as Christians, because this is not social science here, this is worship, and as Christians, we can go further than simply recognizing the social dimensions. We can see, and we should see, all of our work in relation to God, because we're created by God in His image to participate in His work. The first worker, after all, is God, the Creator. The first work was the first days of creation. God did all the work, right? We weren't created till the sixth day. And then we were given a place in the work. So that's it. So we're part, our work is part of our responsibility before God as His stewards, as His gardeners. That came up when we were talking about creation the other day. The day of prayer for the care of creation. Well, that's not a leftist movement. That's just part of being a Christian. Take care of creation. Okay. But our work is part of our collaboration with God, our participation in creation, which includes, by the way, participation in His rest. Remember, God rested on the seventh day, and that's why we rest. Now, God never stops doing what He does, but that was for our sake. He knows that there has to be rest. So that's it. Now, the marvels of human advancement, human technology, which are amazing, that has its place in God's plan. That's not against God, but it can be used outside of God's standards, you could say, or outside His principles. And that's where our reflection on our work has to be done in light of God, because exploitation and abuse and enslavement and violation of rights and dignity, that's never part of God's plan. Never. So that's what we have to oppose in ourselves and in our world. Now, I decided, as I said, to take the Mass for the sanctification of human labor. It's a beautiful little title. Human labor is what the secular holiday is, but sanctification, that's Christian work. And we're praying for sanctification, making holy. So to make holy Christian, all labor, make holy our work. Something like the Benedictines, you know, the Benedictines, they have that motto, ora et labora. Ora is prayer, labora is work. Pray and work. pray and work. That's the vocation of the Benedictines. You go up to Mount Savior, what do? There they pray and they work. And that's a very beautiful, holy life. That's sanctification of human labor and sanctification of creation. Okay. Now, the readings of today. I know it's a holiday, so you don't mind if I talk a little longer. Anyway, you're stuck here. Now, I can exploit you. Well, my laborers. Actually, I'm doing labor here myself, because preaching is also labor. No, that's the labor of the church. So the readings today... not chosen for Labor Day, as I said, but I found out just a little while ago there are some readings available for Labor Day, but they were not in this book, and they're not in that book, and they're not in this book. So how to find them? Anyway, in this gospel today, Jesus, our model, Jesus, our guide, Jesus, wisdom incarnate, Jesus, the carpenter, Jesus, who Mary Magdalene thought was a gardener, Jesus is here working, of all things. On the Sabbath. Horrors. He's working on the Sabbath. Now, what's the case? There's a man in this, it's a synagogue, it's Sabbath, he goes to the synagogue, and there's a man there whose right hand is withered. Now, that's certainly simply the details of the case, but it also has symbolic meaning, because the right hand, well, if you're right-handed, is your primary tool for work. This man can't work. It's affected his livelihood, his labor. And according to some principles in the Jewish tradition, a person with an infirmity was not allowed to enter the temple. Now, I don't know how strict that was, but because this guy was in the synagogue, so they let him in. But an infirmity also had a ritual effect, rendering a person unclean. Symbolically, this man can't pray. He can't raise his hands in prayer to God. So, it doesn't say that. I'm just reading into it a little bit. But this man is burdened with a withered hand. And he can't work. Will Jesus work? Will Jesus work? Well, he first asks the Pharisees, scribes and Pharisees, this question. I ask you, is it lawful to do good on the Sabbath rather than to do evil? To save life rather than to destroy it? Is it lawful to do good, to save life on the Sabbath? Now, this is not a hard question. It's like a very easy question. It's very obvious that it's good to do good and it's good to save life. It's bad to do evil, it's bad to destroy life. It doesn't matter what day it is. You don't have to have faith to know that it's good to do good and it's good to save life. It's not a faith question. It's not even a hard question. It's something like in the first reading, the issue in the Corinthian community is there's somebody living with his father's wife, meaning incest. You don't have to have faith to know incest is gravely wrong. It's illegal. I mean, come on. It doesn't take very much. It doesn't take any work. Just obvious. Now, the Pharisees and the scribes, they don't give any answer. So Jesus, to make it clear what's the right thing to do on the Sabbath and every other day, he did good. He healed the man. Instant healing. Stretch out your hand. His hand is restored. The effect on the Pharisees was it turned them against him. And they became enraged. Something wrong with them. Now, this guy's got a withered hand. They've got something else withered. A heart withered, an interior life that is incapable of seeing something so basically good. So that's a problem. Okay, but when it comes to basic questions, as I say, Labor Day does bring up some very basic things like dignity, rights, just wages. That sort of thing. No exploitation. Not putting money as valuing money higher than persons. You don't need faith to know that that's the way it is. But we do need faith to transcend the systems that drag us down, and our own nature drags us down, because we're all tempted to make something else more important than the human person. But anyway, we can work with institutions, organizations, governments that uphold human dignity. everyone should uphold standards of health and safety and peace and freedom, and we should all fight human trafficking. Okay, that's all part of this day. But even more than all that, because everybody should agree on that, we should also take on the work of sanctification, which the world doesn't do and doesn't even see the value of, but we should. The value of sanctification, the work of prayer, the work of sacrifice, the work of service, the work of love, even to love those who don't love us back. That's hard work, but very, very valuable work, precious work. The work of doing what's right, even when the consequences on us are heavy. That's as Jesus does, right? He does this good work, knowing that they're going to be furious at him, and he's the one who's going to have to suffer. He did it anyway. That's good work. It's a work of sanctification. In yesterday's gospel, we got an instruction on the work of fraternal correction, remember? If your brother sins against you, go and talk to him. That's hard work. It's hard to correct people. It's much easier not to do it. It's much easier to gossip or to be resentful or to retaliate. That's a lot easier. It's hard work to do what's right. So that's not part of Labor Day in the world, but that's part of our labor as Christians. Do the hard work of loving as God loves. It's hard to love as God loves. It's hard to forgive as God forgives. But that's our work, and he gives us the grace to do it. One thing that's very difficult is to allow the consequences of people's wrongdoing to fall on them. This is a very hard thing to do, but it's part of love. I'm referring to the first reading here where Paul says, give this guy over to Satan. Well, what's he doing there? He's allowing sin to have negative effects on the sinner so that he will see what he's doing wrong and will change. And this is a very hard thing to do. I know parents struggle with this, how to punish a child or allow the child to experience consequences for wrongdoing when it seems like the more loving thing is to save the child or to save the person, which becomes enabling, right? We end up defending people's wrongdoing instead of helping them. So that's part of our work as well. It's not vindictiveness to let people suffer some consequences of their wrongdoing. God does this to us all the time, and he loves us more than we can imagine. So it's part of love for the sake of salvation. This is what Paul says. I'm trying to build on this strange passage where Paul says, well, here's a guy who's in incest, kick him out and hand him over to Satan. Well, that doesn't sound very loving, does it? He says, I pass judgment on this guy and I'm not even there. And people say, well, you know, what right do you have to judge him? He's not judging the man as if he's condemning him to hell. He's judging the wrongdoing and saying, let this man know he's a serious condition. Let him know so that he rejects it. And so expel him from the community to show the seriousness of his spiritual condition. And this is how he says it. Huh? Deliver him to Satan. That's the language of the day. For the destruction of his flesh, so that his spirit may be saved on the day of the Lord. So the intention is that he be saved. And that's the intention of all our work. It's the intention of all our labor for salvation. We don't have to hand people over to Satan. I think that's a pretty rare case. But we do have a lot of work to do. The work of love, the labor of love. This is Labor Day. Yes, it's Labor Day. Go on a picnic and enjoy it. Go to the lake or whatever. It's kind of a cold day, but relax on Labor Day. Yes, that's right. But never give up the labor of being a Christian. Never give up the labor of being a follower of Jesus Christ. The hard work of following him and doing what's right. Work every day for the glory of God and the sanctification of souls. Every day participate in the sanctification of human labor. That's our mission, and we never give it up.